Well, welcome. Welcome to Poetry Aloud, everyone. First, let me thank WERU-FM and Matt Murphy for the sound. Very important to hear every single word. And then also to Samantha Haskell and her staff for providing the books at all the different locations and also at her bookstore on Pleasant Street. Okay. So just about every poet, and most of you here, have ideas about what poetry should do. And Billy Collins has written many types of poems, long and short. But as one of America's most accessible and funny poets, he has devoted one collection to the short poem. And of the short poem, he says, they seem to arrive and depart at the same time. They are drastic examples of poetry's way of squeezing large content into tight spaces. He has one of his own poems. I'll say one of his own short poems is entitled 3 o'clock a.m. Are you ready for it? Because it's short. Only my hand is asleep, but it's a start. And he has one more. I have to read it. Nothing against anyone who writes memoir, okay? But he says, it's in his poem Cornish. He writes, would someone please translate her long memoir into a language almost no one speaks or understands? Still, well, and others, of course, approach poetry with a great reverence, as does Billy in his longer poems as well. But Kristen Wiman, who reminds us that in the end we go to poetry for one reason, so that we might more fully inhabit our lives and the world in which we live them. It's a pleasure to introduce our three poets today, and they will help us do just that. Poet Kathleen Ellis teaches at the University of Maine at Orno in the Honors Program and offers workshops at Farnsworth Museum in the summer and also coordinates the Wonderful Poets Speaks in Bangor at Bangor Public Library. Her books include River to the North, Outer Body Travel, and Body of Evidence, which won the 22 Grayson Books Poetry Contest. One note of interest you might not be aware of about her is that her manuscript of poems, Dear Darwin, was set to music, released as a Parma recording CD, and was nominated for a 2015 Grammy Award. Dave Morrison, poet and songwriter, has penned 17 books of poetry, to my knowledge, his newest being We Are Here and It Is Now. He's the current manager of the Camden Opera House, and what you might not know is that as a musician, he played in rock bands in Boston and New York City. He'll treat us to both his poetry and music as well. Finally, Maya Williams, Portland's 7th Poet Laureate, and this year's Ashley Bryant Fellow. Their What's So Wrong with the Pity Party, Refused a Second Date, and Judas and Suicide. They were the finalists in the national poetry event Slam, Free, or Die. Maya will also perhaps read us one of the, or present us with one of her slam poems. So please welcome, the three poets to the stage today.
Thank you.
Hello?
That's about right.
Is that good? Okay. Welcome, and I'm so happy to be sharing this beautiful spot to read with my fellow readers, poets. I'm going to be reading from Body of Evidence, and I just want to give a shout out to my very good friend Annalise Jachimides, who, she didn't design it, but we picked one of her paintings to be on the cover of it, and I really love the cover. So, and I'm going to read maybe, I don't know, six, seven, or eight, they're very, very short poems from Body of Evidence, and then read two poems that I've written recently. So these poems came about through waking me up. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I started waking up in the middle of the night and having these lines, can you hear me better now? These lines of poems coming to me. I didn't know where they were coming from because I'd been working on poems that had nothing to do with, do not do that. Nothing to do with the subject matter that was bubbling up. And so I started writing these poems. Most of them from the beginning here in the book are prose poems. And I think they explain themselves, but maybe I should say that I grew up in a family of Christian Scientists. And it was very difficult, and I think especially for girls, young women, it's hard to believe in some of what Christian Science has to say. So the first one is the Spanish flu. My mother was born without a body. At least that's what my grandmother said. I always wondered why my mother was born at home. Was it the Spanish flu, or that her mother was a Christian Scientist? Before she died in her 80s of septic shock, she went into a coma where there is no body, where nobody bleeds. This one's called Ghost Child. And if you're not familiar with the religion, they have practitioners. And practitioners are people who have been approved by the Mother Church in Boston. And my grandmother happened to be a practitioner. They are available to you by just calling up, and they talk to you on the phone. So, Ghost Child. When there was an earache, but no earache, no, this never happened. When there were measles and whooping cough, and my palms were clasped awkwardly together, and my mother was on the phone with her mother, the practitioner, I felt the shape of the word made stone inside my chest, and circling that terrible desire to escape, I am not certain whether inward or outward, my mouth had opened wide for the breath flying out of the body. This one is Into Thin Air. Again, this is a prose poem, goes all the way over to the right-hand edge of the page. Into Thin Air. I reach for the body and find it dispersed into thin air. The stars don't help. I know they are hiding something, the 10,000 things of the Tao. If I am not body, how can I speak or breathe? If I am not somebody, where do my feet go each morning? How do I know where I am without the compass of my brain? Why does Emily say, I am afraid to own a body, profound, precarious property? And this one is sixth grade science class. I was not allowed to take science. We had three little cards that we brought to school in the fall in elementary school. One was pink, one was yellow, and one was blue. And I forget which was for which. But one was that no shots or any kind of medical attention would be given. The second one had to do with once there was science being taught in the class, the person who was a Christian Scientist had to get up and leave the room and go to the library or whatever and not come back until called upon. Sixth grade science class. When the teacher assigns a project on human cells, he motions for me to leave the room. I head for the library to read about whales, their huge bodies, titanic heads, blowholes spouting breath into vapor. They can stay underwater for over an hour. Instead of reading more, I draw a picture of a girl with a sharp-edged fluke, holding her breath for what seems like forever. This one is called Condolences. So my grandmother did die, and there was a service in the Christian Science Church in Oakland, California. And there was a casket. And I was in my freshman year in college. So my parents came and got me, and we went. And I was still naive enough to think, well, there probably is a body in that casket. Condolences. All through childhood, my grandmother reminds me I have no body, no body to suffer, to ache, to know pain or death. When she dies in the 1960s, there is no body in her casket. At the service, the man with the kindly eyes rattles off all the good she's doing in her life in the present tense. No one approaches the casket. Nobody checks to make sure. And in 1954, and there was a polio scare, more than a scare, and people in our neighborhood, children, were getting polio. And so my family was assumed to be the carrier because we had not done anything about getting a vaccine. So this is called War on Polio, 1954. And someone said, and someone asked, and someone wanted to know, and someone knew the only way to end this was by rolling up your sleeve. And the girl in the corner, and then the boy next door, and then we were surrounded by crippled legs and backs. And then my mother, which we didn't know until years later, and we kept on turning in our exemption cards. 1966. And 12 years later, I'm standing in the student plaza where people are lined up for sugar cubes. My friend says, "We're next." And he asks, "You did have the vaccine as a girl, didn't you?" And someone holding a small cup offers, and I say no, and my friend shuns me for a week. We're moving away from the earlier time. And this one is called Touch and Go. Touch and go. I touch everything that matters, nouns, pronouns, body parts. When I climb to the top of Half Dome, the valley below is tempting. I want to lean over and touch the frigid water of the Merced River below. I want to smooth my hand along the face of El Capitan. I want to try a few touch and goes, swooping down, then landing and taking off again. That girl's bruise on her shin when she fell on the trail. That man's bicep bulging out of his t-shirt. This gnarled juniper clinging to life between the granite cracks. I want to touch them all. I want to touch the world that has knocked me sensate. And this one is called Heart Condition. Knowing the cold, hard facts about glaciation doesn't mean we accept the wearing away of the coasts we live on. I'm winding my way beside the Penobscot River, taking in the canopy of trees and parts per million of carbon in the air and the river rising and falling. When I reach the dam, the river plunges into its massive tremors. There's a physical condition called broken heart syndrome. It's caused by an emotional reaction to lost love, triggering a surge of hormones. One theory is your heart's damaged. The repair of the injury requires stem cells. However, if the damage is stress-related, you can't repair your heart. We prepare for the clamor of the melting ice sheet. We listen back into the Laurentide, its stressed arteries carrying the burden of loss. How this heart in which we live is the future of all its past. And couple more from here. This one's late in the book, and it's called Blood, Sweat, and Tears. If I had a daughter, I'd tell her, you have a body. It grows on you, this body, this knowing, its 10 orifices open to the world. If I had a daughter, I'd explain how the auditory canal directs airwaves from outside to the tympanic membrane conveying electric energy to the brain to hear the planet humming. If I had a daughter, I'd show her the nares at the entrance to her nose and the slimy surface inside collecting dust, pollen, detritus to keep these out of her always and draw in the living breath of the earth. If I had a daughter, I'd want her to know the whereabouts of that crevice, the conduit to the uterus from where we all come into being. If I had a daughter, I'd want her to recognize that her words hang in the air, almost never black or white. That which comes up from the windpipe is the breath of the trachea, vocalized into what matters. If I had a daughter, I'd laugh and cry with my mouth full of the concerns mothers have for their daughters, in harm's way, in the way of the body in this world. If I had a daughter, I'd tell her it matters, this body, that knows its entrances into and exits out of the world. But she'd already know. The body always knows, unless it's been compromised. And I just want to end, I think I'll just end with one poem here, which I wrote a couple of weeks ago when we had a power outage in Old Town in Maine in the grocery store. And if you know the poem that Allen Ginsberg wrote about the supermarket and trying to find Walt Whitman in the supermarket, yeah, it starts with a little nod to that. Looking for Allen Ginsberg during a power outage in Old Town, Maine. When the lights went out at Hannaford's in Old Town, Maine, I clung to the handlebar of the shopping cart and took out my mini keychain light searching for you. At first, I was two hands on the bar, and then when my eyes adjusted to the dim emergency light, I pawed the shelves for ease of motion. Items kept falling off the shelves as I dodged the other shoppers. Making a sharp turn for the frozen food aisle, the light was flickering on and off, like you, chaotically, Allen Ginsberg, dancing your head off at the human being years ago in Golden Gate Park, tambourine in one hand, and your wild head of hair bouncing to the vibes. I have the photo to prove it. Back in Old Town, the lights were having their go at it, attempting to dance the dance, and I was skirting the buildup of carts near the steamy Ben and Jerry's freezer aisle. Lights coming back on, and I found you, ranting about the lack of frozen veggies while I was choosing between flavors, knowing all along you'd given up lactose. But somehow, I knew you hadn't given up on America, as you shivered with the sliding glass door open between us, humming in the mist, 17 syllables American haiku. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Now please welcome Dave Morrison.
So great to see you. Thank you for coming to this. And thank you for all the good folks who put on this festival. This is called Old Friends. We were feeling blue, work tired and done with the rain, so we went to that store with the good coffee and the cookies the size of a Viking shield. And we drove down quiet straight roads through the tunnel of ancient trees, and we talked of familiar things. And we were lifted, just enough that the rain and fog and fatigue were not only acceptable, but old friends, really. And we were filled with that sense that familiar things and simple pleasures would continue to save us. You don't have to be like super quiet because it's poetry if you don't want to. Just saying. It's good for you. Let it out. This poem, is based on a true story. And it's really about this very guitar. The poem is called New Guitar. And here we go. My wife asks why I need a new guitar. Fair question. I have several, more than I need, and I do not depend on them for my livelihood. I told her that the rebel group and the opposing army both believe that they have justification for the horrible things they do that will guarantee that a practical peace will never be gained. And innocent people on both sides will suffer unspeakably, as this is what we humans have done for thousands of years. We punish the innocent because we lack the imagination and the will to come to a sensible compromise. It's global. Everywhere there are humans, there is hubris and stupidity and needless suffering. People who should not be trusted to run a lemonade stand are making important decisions, guided only by their greed and egos. We are cruel and gullible. We cannot handle nuance or complexity. We thump our holy book, but we don't read it. We are horrible, and the innocent always suffer. A guitar, on the other hand, is a beautiful and honest tool that will only do what we ask it. It's loaded with possibility and devoid of judgment. It is hope, it is real, and I need another one, if for no other reason than to give me something to think about besides the burning circus tent filled with decay that is now. Thank you so much. So this poem was written when I got COVID. And it's not necessarily a COVID poem, but it is definitely a fever poem. And it's called Can't Find My Way Home. I've had a fever for 3 days. My head has felt at times like an abandoned cargo ship, airless and dark and resonant. Today, something new. Someone has left a radio on in the empty hold, and now the rusted walls ring with a pleasing ambience. I can hear not only every instrument, but each string, each key, each singer taking a breath. A haunting richness. Someone has broken in during the night and laid out oriental carpets and lit candles. The songs repeat, twining and twisting, exposing their inner workings. There's no other sounds, not a footstep or door latch or distant ringing phone. It's like hearing music for the first time, mad and marvelous, the difference between touching a thing or the real thing. When my temperature goes down, will the colors fade? The oral hallucinations stop? Will I return to ticking clocks, ringing in the ears, tires on pavement, a healthy, ordinary head? Oh, thank you. This poem, it came from sort of two separate thoughts running on parallel tracks in my head that somehow got twisted together. On the one hand, I had read an article that said, what would happen to New York City if you removed all the people? And on the other hand, I just heard from my friend that his wife, after a long struggle with cancer, had died. And somehow these two got twisted. And this is called Empty City. Imagine the biggest city you've ever seen, bustling with activity and commerce, building and tearing down and building again. Now, consider it empty. It's not easy. A city's reason for existing is people. We were taught that cockroaches would outlast us all, and rats. In fact, without heated buildings, cockroaches would be some of the first to go. And without human garbage, rats would be nearly decimated by falcons. My friend just lost his wife, and I don't know what to say, except that my heart aches for him. I imagine after years of being a caregiver, his life may become simpler, fewer forms, fewer trips to the hospital and pharmacy, fewer agonizing worries. I suppose one's house becomes less cluttered. First the hospital bed goes, then the pill bottles, medical supplies. After several freeze-thaw cycles, asphalt and concrete begins to crack. Weeds and wildflowers take root. Metal begins to rust. Subway tunnels fall in on themselves and become river canyons. Coyotes roam primeval forests that were once parks. Maybe my friend will find that after a while he has free time he doesn't remember having, and will plant a garden, dust off the guitar, write a memoir, consider a smaller house. I picture my friend years from now sitting on his porch, coffee gone cold, time traveling in his mind to 1,000 days spent together while gangs of birds mob the feeders. In time, what will be left will be the sturdy stone structures of an earlier time. Train trestles, libraries, breakwaters, our Roman roads. In the end, nature takes everything back. I hope my friend can find some comfort in this. Thank you. A number of years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer, and I dealt with it and tried to figure it out in the same way I pretty much deal with everything and try and figure it out, which is by writing about it. So, this started off as a sort of a cancer treatment poem, but really it's turned into sort of an everyday poem. It's called Morning Prayer. I am going to die, but probably not today. What shall I do with this wonderful news? One day the lights will go out, the engine room will grow cold and quiet. I'll be surprised to realize I've just exhaled for the last time. All this will come to pass, but probably not today, this newly excellent day. I've made mistakes, but none today. I have trespassed and been trespassed against. I've broken hearts and had mine broken. I've caused and felt all manner of difficulty. But today, so far, everything is more or less perfect and balanced and harmonious. What shall I do with this perfect day? Oh, thank you. You're very kind. Okay, this is the last one. And this is one I've started ending with all the time. And the reason why is because I was doing this at this kind of happy hour thing at this restaurant bar close to where we live. And my wife had to work, and I didn't know if she'd make it there or not. And I was doing this, and it was the last poem, and just as I started it, the doors open, and there, silhouetted by the setting sun, she was, just like that scene from The Natural. You know the one I mean? Anyway. So, never hurts to end with a love poem. This is called You. I loved The Outsiders. I loved West Side Story. I loved the Red Sox. I loved the Asbury Jukes. I loved the idea of being in a gang. I was in a band once, and it felt like being in a gang. We ate together and drove together, climbed and suffered together, and finally broke apart like a race car hitting the wall. Now, my love, in this time of distance and separation, you are my gang, and I am yours. We have a story, a history, scars, a trophy case. We've marked our growth on the closet doorframe. No one understands us like us. No one has earned what we have earned. There's no one else I want in my gang. Just you. Thank you so much.
It's just not going to work. No, it'll loosen it. Thank you, Dave, for sharing that with us. That was beautiful. All right, and now please welcome Maya Williams.
Thank you so much. I'm going to set a timer for 20 minutes starting now. Thank you, Marie, for having us. Thank you so much to Dave and Kathleen for your beautiful poems and beautiful music. Thank you to, oh my God, where is she? Well, anyways, I'm grateful for Samat and Kate for the nature workshop, and I'm grateful for folks who showed up to the Where Does Your Grief Sit writing workshop for this morning, and thank you to my lovely fiance, Jonathan, for driving last night to make sure we got here. Thank you so much. Thank you for the Leonards for housing us. There we go. Yes, thank you, Samat, for your lovely nature workshop with Kate. Yes. I'll be reading 9 poems as long as time permits it, as long as the timer permits it. I will be reading poems about suicide, grief, religion, so please take care of yourselves as needed. I'll be selling books in the back along with fellow poets in the back, so please buy our work. And this opening poem is from my collection, Judas and Suicide, and how fitting it is to read it in a church. It's called Good, Good Prayer. I want that good, good prayer, not that talk to God so you don't have to talk to me prayer. I want that talk to God so you can talk to your people how you need to prayer. I want that good, good prayer, not that welcome the Lord into your heart, pontificating in public prayer. I want that welcome the Lord into your heart privately when you're ready prayer. I want that good, good prayer, not that sending thoughts and prayers prayer from aimless Facebook comments or check-in text messages, impulsively obligatory while full of permission to forget. I want that. I'm making my prayers float and move beyond my bedroom prayer that lead to holding someone or advocating in a way impulsively obligatory while full of permission to remember. I want that good, good prayer. Not that God doesn't want you swearing or speaking in slang prayer. I want that juicy, colorful, honest prayer. I want that good, good prayer. Not that he's in a better place prayer. I want that he was taken against his will, so how do we give others better reasons to stick around prayer. I want that good, good prayer. Not that God is not calling us to that now, surface level prayer. I want that God is calling to us and we're not leaving the sanctuary until we're done prayer. Thank you. This next poem I hadn't read in a while, it's called Contracts. My therapist once told me, "You don't strike me as someone who fears death." I blame knowing death pretty well. We're not friends, but we're not foes either. Our relationship is purely transactional. Death promised me wondrous gifts life couldn't offer. Heaven, quiet, the end of pain. My suicide notes were death putting the promises in writing. Life may have stepped in time for me to shred the contracts, but death still kept the offer in cold storage. Even when life was treating me better, death still seemed appealing. Ideation was filled with death's gifts. I didn't intend to unwrap them. Death still checks in on me when an episode strikes me, when life fails another loved one. Still, it's nice to know. I'm not afraid of death for a completely different reason now. Our negotiation will come naturally, not forced through suicide notes. Thank you. So there are a series of poems in the collection that responds to a Bible verse where a completed suicide, suicidal ideation, or an attempted suicide takes place. And this is from, so the poem will start with an epigraph from the book of Judges and then commence with a poem about Samson. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." He pushed hard and the temple collapsed on the rulers and all the people in it. He killed many more people in his death than he had killed during his life. The book of Judges, chapter 16, verse 30. From the moment Samson had his hair cut, he let go of his strength, his sheets, his lion carcass trophy, his indulgence in honey, his riddles, his ex's tears, his kingdom, his team of fellow soldiers, his parents' respect, his ropes, his shackles. He took people with him and was praised for it. I thought that cutting my hair would help me let go. I refused to take anyone with me. Thank you. This next poem is from my collection, Refused a Second Date, and it talks more about dating, interpersonal relationships as it relates to mental health. And this poem is called How to Become a Manic Pixie Dreamboat in the Movie of Your Life. Tell your dreams to your potential / official significant other. Listen to theirs in return. Do everything in your power to help their dreams come true. Place a bookmark in your dream journal. Dog ear the page for a behind-the-scenes detail, a director's cut commentary. There are only a few people interested in how the movie gets made anyway. Most just sit there, ready to consume, ready to immerse. Make the viewer strive to become the hero who is your partner. They strive for the ideal romance that is crafted by you either keeping your mouth shut or pursuing adventure to the point of making your partner interesting. It's a thankless job to be the sole reason for that interest and intrigue, but that's okay. You love your role in the mania for passion. You exist for viewing and experiential pleasure. You are a bowl you fill with your partner's emotional wounds, labor, and hyper-idealism. You are your partner's as-needed wet dream. Your partner's as-needed wet blanket. Your partner's as-needed therapist. Your partner's as-needed non-incestuous parent. Besides, there's a reason why your hard work is so popular at the box office. Be compensated through occasional flights of fancy, through begrudged, half-assed, happily repressed long-term commitment. You made your partner. You get to keep them. They get the fans' autographs. You get the verbal contract you've been raised to obtain from your partner. Remember, you both are such good people. Remember, it's okay. Your partner will be appreciated for that goodness more. You have reached my emotional capacity. If you are my stepmother, please hang up and refer to boundary set Thursday, February 26, 2021 at 4:05 p.m. and Saturday, July 9, 2022 at 8:18 p.m. My hope is you either divorce my father or go to therapy. If you are my father, please hang up and refer to boundary set Friday, August 26, 2022 at 1:50 p.m. My hope is you either divorce my stepmother or go to therapy. If you are my chosen family, press 1 to leave a message. My hope is to reply when my emotional capacity is available. To hear these options again, press star now. My most recent collection, What's So Wrong with a Pity Party Anyway, is also available along with these books. Thank you for selling our books today. I'm also available for poetry commissions, and I can be emailed at mayawilliams16@gmail.com if you're searching for a holiday gift for someone, perhaps, or there's an upcoming event at your place of profession. Please email me. This poem is called Delivery Has Failed to Send, and it's the first poem in the collection. What a scam being alive is after losing so many people I thought I could hold on to. I haven't cried for Michael since 2018 after losing him in 2014. If I stopped crying for 6 out of the 10 years he's been gone, what does that say about my monstrous memory? What does that say for how long my brain can retain him before he slips away? I had this bad habit of messaging him after he was gone. I wanted him so badly to respond. It was the first time I ever experienced the denial part of grief for someone who died. The first time facts weren't enough proof for me. Are these lack of tears a new denial my body has formulated? Is my body marking all of missing him as spam? How much searching do I have to do to regulate the tears into my inbox again? Or do I have to search at all? God, I wish I had better metaphors. Who can speak in metaphors when my first kiss, my first fellow queer friend, my first fellow mentally ill friend is dead still? At least the tears were proof he was here. It still makes me upset I couldn't attend his funeral. I don't always say my dad tried his best, but that day he did. Travels couldn't work out. No gravesite visit yet. I have been revising the same poem about Michael since 2014. Doesn't that show he's still in every poem of mine, whether I like it or not? Thank you so much. For folks who are in the Where Does Your Grief Sit workshop, we read a poem by Kaveh Akbar, and this poem I wrote is inspired by that poem. Papa Jay's gone like Iron Man, isn't he? After Kaveh Akbar. Action figures escape from Papa Jay's casket. Action figures flash out of unfamiliar acquaintances' phones. Event programs of pre-cancer Papa J are picked up as every attendee's personal action figure. Each daffodil in the sanctuary is an action figure bright and ready for battle. Women are rocking their action figure ornamented church hats. Men are stunting in their action figure church ties. All accessorized adornments are action figures that have been taken out of hiding from their closets. Bees buzz action figures near the window. Windows reek action figures too. Bible pages are flipped open by the pastor and action figures spill out from everyone. The pulpit is an action figure. The microphone is an action figure. The organ is a whole ass action figure, as well as the notes that spew out of it. Walls are all action figures. Seats are all action figures. People seated soon become action figures. Liam, age 7, is right about the conclusion of all our favorite heroes. This next poem is called In Memoriam, and this is after Jetty Booley. Not a casket, but an urn. Not an urn, but an ornament. Not an ornament, but a memory. Not a memory, but a door. Not a door, but a window. Not a window, but a breeze. Not a breeze, but a sigh. Not a sigh, but a sunray. Not a sunray, but a rain cloud. Not a rain cloud, but a bed. Not a bed, but a wound. Not a wound, but a sore. Not a sore, but a hug. Not a hug, but a gaze. Not a gaze, but a breath. Not a breath, but an ending. Not an ending, but a beginning. Again, thank you all so much for being here. Thank you for taking the time to listen to all of us read poems. Thank you for taking the time out of your weekend to spend time with words at this lovely festival. Thank you again, Marie, for organizing. I will read one more poem, and then Marie will close us out however she would like. Yeah. Again, please purchase our books. I'm pretty sure we'd be happy to sign them for you. And again, if you're looking for commissions, you can reach out to me or speak to me. And this poem is the title poem of this lovely little chapbook. What's so wrong with a pity party anyway? We can discuss the nuance of privilege and circumstance later. Right now, I want purple streamers and glitter scattered on the floor at my pity party. I want the perfect beanbag chairs for me and my guests. I want my guests to have an in-person and Zoom option. I want people to live tweet my pity party so the public can tune in. I want my pity party to be a cozy 3 hours. I want folks to know they can leave as early as desired. I want a sober punch bowl and a spiked punch bowl appropriately labeled. I want all the best flavored and styled Cheetos. I want all the Oreos because they're kosher, vegan, gluten-free, halal, and gay-friendly. Damn it, I want Oreos for everyone at my pity party. I don't know about you, but I'll be wearing my teal dress I call Old Faithful with black sweatpants underneath. I want to see a full range of red carpet looks from animal jumper PJs to diamond-studded gowns at my pity party. I want people to dress up however they want at my pity party. I want a good-ass playlist with every song using the phrase pity party so we can boo to it, sing along to it, see how often one can do the Macarena to it. I want there to be plenty of wailing and screaming!
I want there to be a comfy room for anyone with sensory overload from the wailing and the screaming.
I want 15 therapists properly compensated to staff my pity party. And their own therapists can come along too. I want the open space for me to cry and make out with my fiancé after a long day of us both being peopled out. I want my pity party to be accessible as fuck, because we all have something to express pity about. We all have something to grieve about. There are days I'm sure we won't want the pity party to end. Thank you so much. 2.5 minutes to spare.